Engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
My fellow Americans, welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. I hope you're doing great today. The phone number, if you want to be on the program, 877-973-7425. We got to explore what Joe Biden is doing with legal protections for undocumented spouses and children. The New York Times is reporting thusly, President Biden will announce sweeping new protections for hundreds of thousands of immigrants who have been living in the United States illegally for years, but are married to American citizens, officials familiar with the plan said. Mr. Biden will detail the policy at the White House on Tuesday, while marking the 12th anniversary of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, which protects people who came to the United States as children from deportation, the official said. They spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss a policy that has not yet been formally announced. Under the policy, undocumented spouses of U.S. citizens will be shielded from deportation, provided work permits, and given a pathway to citizenship. Officials briefed on the conversation said it would affect 500,000 undocumented spouses, although the exact scale of the program remains unclear. Marrying an American citizen generally provides a pathway to citizenship, but people who crossed the southern border illegally, rather than arriving in the country with a visa, must return to their home countries to complete the process for a green card. This means separations from spouses and families. The new program would allow families to remain in the country while they pursue legal status. All right. This is one of those where you got to hear me out on all of it. It's undeniably pro-family. You're going to allow the spouse who's an illegal alien to stay in the country while you process their citizenship paperwork, which they're going to get. I don't really have a problem with that. However, does he have the legal authority to do it? I have a problem with it if he doesn't have the legal authority to do it, and I don't know. And there are questions about it, and surely it's going to get challenged in court. But I have a larger, bigger problem with this. Mr. Biden, again to the New York Times, Mr. Biden will detail the policy at the White House on Tuesday while marking the 12-year anniversary of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program. Why didn't he do it on the 11th anniversary? Or the 10th anniversary? Or the 9th anniversary? When Joe Biden came into the office of the presidency of the United States, he immediately undid pretty much every Trump executive order, wiped them all out, upended the immigration problems in this country because Donald Trump was bad, according to Joe Biden. Why didn't he do this then? See, I don't think you can argue this is a bad policy from a humanitarian pro-family aspect because it's allowing families to stay together. Someone came to this country, that person's an illegal alien, they fall in love with an American. It's not, forget the, yeah, okay, sure, some of them are getting married for citizenship, but by and large, let's just say it's authentic love. They have a family. They have children. They are married. The spouse is an illegal alien. It is pro-family to allow that person to stay in this country, not separate the family, keep them from their children and their husband or wife. It's a pro-family thing. And it's so pro-family and so good as a policy position and easily explain, easily defend, probably going to be popular with the public decision. Why didn't you do it when you first got there, Joe? This is a poll-tested position for an election year, or he would not have done it. And because there's no legislation, it can be reversed by Donald Trump. Here's Scott Jennings on CNN.
Why didn't Joe Biden do this on his first day in office, as opposed to doing it today here in the shadow of a presidential campaign? I mean, the reality is he's governing by political panic. If this is such a great idea, why didn't he do this on day one? Why didn't he do last week's executive order on day one? Why did he cancel all of Trump's immigration orders? I agree with Maria. People are tired of chaos, and they believe the chaos has been caused by Joe Biden and the way he's handled this for the last 3.5 years. The polling is clear. By the way, politically, I don't think the American people are in a pro-amnesty mood right now. You look at what Trump is proposing, there's a lot of polling that shows majority support for what Trump is saying, including among Hispanics in the United States of America. They
what
like
about
what
detention?
Trump is saying
but
about
Scott,
cracking
about
down on illegal immigration.
He's right. Did you hear this? Majority of Hispanic voters in the United States of America support mass deportations. Democrats, I kid you not, they're already making Hitler comparisons. They're already talking about Hitler. No, Hitler didn't mass deport people. He gassed them and killed them. A majority of Hispanic voters in the United States, forget white voters, forget black voters, Hispanic voters, the ones we're told want amnesty, the ones we're told we can't close the border because it would offend them, the majority of those people want mass deportations. You know, Scott may actually be right that if the Republicans claim this is a form of amnesty, and they minimize that it's about keeping moms with their kids when they're married to an American, they may be able to shift the polling on this. I think it's a reasonable policy in the practical application of it, though. I don't know that he has the authority to do it. And two, if he was really serious about it, he could have done it on day one, and he chose not to. So really, this is just a cynical ploy, and probably one that will have people go off to court, have it thrown out, and then he can blame the Republicans for throwing it out and separating moms and dads. And then he can, with gusto, break up those families, except he's not going to do that either. There is a level of cynical politics at play here. You can't deny that, Democrats. He could have done this sooner, and he didn't. He's doing it now because he probably conducted a poll and thought, this might help him change the topic of conversation. See, the problem is right now, you got a majority of Hispanic voters, you got a majority of Americans, but a majority of Hispanic voters in this country who no longer like Joe Biden and believe that we need mass deportations. And so Joe Biden needs to do something to deal with the Hispanic voters. He needs to placate them in some way. And he needs to turn the conversation away from mass deportations into some sort of saving face, kumbaya, everyone's going to love this. And what better way to say, we're not going to deport mom because she's an illegal and break up a family. We're not going to deport dad. We're going to let him stay and give him a job. It's all so deeply cynical. And so if you're still following along with me and you're not furious at me for saying I can see it as pro-family, I can see it as pro-family. You're keeping a parent here who's an illegal alien, who's married to a citizen, and now they have kids who are American citizens, and you're not breaking up the family. But I can also see it as a deeply cynical exploitation of family. Because it is. Because he could have done it sooner. And instead what he's doing is he's taking these 500,000 spouses, men and women, which means 500,000 families in this country, and he's very cynically treating them as pawns in the election. And that's not pro-family. In fact, that offers no stability to a family. It offers dread. What if the other guy wins? What will he do to me? And that's designed to exploit their anxieties about their status for his political benefit, not to do the right thing, but to do the thing that helps him politically. And there's something actually pretty terrible about that. the exploitation of this issue that hangs over families to try to compel these people that you better vote for me or else. That is not the pro-family aspect of this. That is the cynical aspect of this, the political timing of this, the worthlessness of this, that all of these people could have had this happen years ago when Joe Biden became president and he decided to wait until now when he needs to hold a sword of Damocles over their heads, daring them to vote for Donald Trump. Just a cynical, cynical ploy. Now, I want to get Ricky's phone call here before we go to break. Ricky, you're going to be up next on the Eric Erickson Show. Welcome.
Hey, Eric, how you doing?
Great. What's going on?
Hey, man, you said something earlier. I've been saying all along, boy. I mean, Trump lost. He did. You know, but this election, they're going to have dogs and cats and chickens and birds and everything else that can find a vote against this man.
Yeah.
I mean, and my biggest problem is, Eric, is that the thing, people think Democrats don't cheat. They cheat, too. But what I call to tell you, my prediction.
Now, listen, Ricky, Democrats don't cheat. They let the dead people do the cheating for them.
Oh, okay. But my prediction, particularly if they get fortunate and win back the House, they want, and Biden wins, as soon as he takes the oath, they're going to vote the 25th Amendment, and God help us, Kamala's become president. Boy, we'd be in trouble there, and Hakeem Jeffries will be vice president. Oh, we're in trouble.
Okay, so I'm glad you bring this up. I don't know that they will do the 25th Amendment in this regard. I actually think that Biden will step aside. I think if he wins, Biden will say, you know what? I've done it. I stopped Donald Trump. Here's my pardon for my son. America, see you later. I don't think they'll ever have to get to the 25th Amendment option. I think he will walk off into the sunset thinking that his legacy is secure, that he beat Donald Trump. The reality, however, Ricky, is that Joe Biden has such a chip on his shoulder, over the Democrats telling him he shouldn't run, that he can't win, blah, 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 that if he does win, that he's going to want to stick it out for a little while. It's all about the chip on his shoulder. He's a man who has something to prove, and his wife is intent on him proving it. It's, by the way, not a recipe for success. It is fundamentally not a recipe for success, but this is what he's got. And so he's doing all these policy initiatives, the immigration initiative, the student loan initiative, all these things, because he knows this election is going to be such a close election. He's got to cobble together disparate constituency groups who may have nothing in common with each other, but they all owe him something. It's a political patron doling out largesse, expecting you to return the favor with your vote because he gave you your student loan forgiveness or your safety from deportation, all so you can go vote for him. We have, in fact, I want to talk about this. We have moved from a nation where both parties believe that you can be elevated up the social ladder with hard work to where you're stuck where you are in your class. Class warfare is useful to them, and you must be beholden to political patrons at the national level to give you the things that you want. And it's polluting both sides of the aisle, and both sides are culpable.
You're listening to The Eric Erickson Show, the perfect blend of news, analysis, opinion, and cooking. Hang on, is that right? Yeah, cooking. Get the podcast, live stream, email, and social media links by texting Eric to 33777 now.
Greetings. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, to the phones we go. John, you're going to be up next. Welcome.
Hey, Eric. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Doing good. Hey, we've got the Congressional District 3 runoff today for the Republicans. Just wondering if you have an opinion on either candidate Mike Dugan being the former Senate Majority Leader, did he actually forward a Republican agenda? And Brian Jack, I'm more concerned, did he pull a, is it more of a Herschel Walker case where we get somebody and then all of a sudden he's not electable?
So no Democrat is going to win the 3rd Congressional District. So Brian Jack is was supported by Donald Trump, worked for Kevin McCarthy, was, I think, he was in a White House political director position. So you should know the conservatives, Mike Crane, and I was back in Philip Singleton, like Mike Crane a lot, they lost. They're both backing Brian Jack. A lot of my friends are backing Brian Jack. Mike Dugan was the Senate leader for some time. He stepped aside. He would definitely be more of an establishment Republican, I think you could say, than what Brian Jack would be. Brian Jack probably more likely to join the House Freedom Caucus, for example, than Mike Dugan, who would probably play better with leadership and be less prone to fight them. Whoever, whichever of those two gets elected, though, they're going to be, I mean, if Donald Trump's elected, whatever Donald Trump wants, they're not going to stand up to him. They'll give him what he wants. So that's kind of Jack is 36. He'd be there for a while. Mike Dugan is 60. He would not be there long. Dugan is a retired Army officer. And, you know, in when he was in the state legislature, he could build coalitions to get stuff done. He was pretty effective at building coalitions. So that's kind of the makeup there. But again, it doesn't matter whether it's Dugan or Jack. Either of them is going to win the general election. There's just no way the Democrats going to win.
Okay. Hey, quick question for Biden's amnesty. My evil brain thinking of a backdoor rule with the ACLU suing him over that amnesty limit rule, them trying to make him basically tie Trump's hands by doing a consent decree and basically agreeing, oh, we can do X, and now because it's a consent decree, They get it through that way.
I love the way you're thinking there, John. Yes. So the problem here is that the ACLU per se would not have standing in a case like this. You actually have to be particularly impacted in order like this, and they're not. It would have to be one of the illegal aliens, and since they benefit from the policy, it would be hard for them to sue. But I like the way you're thinking. Yeah, getting some level of consent decree. So that Trump would be bound to it. It wouldn't surprise me if they try something like that. The standing issue would make it difficult, though. All right, I got to tell you guys about Old Glory Bank, and I need to disclose for you now, I did buy in shares of Old Glory Bank. I've been so impressed with them. I was willing to also buy some stock in the company. I like them that much. They've been so innovative as a bank, by conservatives for conservatives. It's easy to get an account for your kids. So my kids, you know, whether it's babysitting or lawn work and chores or gifts, like my daughter got checks for her high school graduation, they got to have some place to put all that money. In Old Glory Bank, you can get a competitive interest rate on a savings account, or you can get a checking account, and there are no fees. So you know, like, your money or your kids' money, you put it at Old Glory Bank, they're not going to get eaten alive with bank fees. OldGloryBank.com, you can get an account less than 8 minutes online. I filled out the form online, got my account a year ago. They've been so great. Their innovative bill pay app, their app, their debit card management, it's all so great. OldGloryBank.com, you can go sign up. OldGloryBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender, terms and conditions apply.
Got the courage to tell you the truth, because the truth is what matters. You're listening to The Eric Erickson Show.
Oh, my. All right. Might as well tell you. Here's the internet rumor of the day that Joe Biden is going to replace Kamala Harris with Hillary Clinton and then step aside so Hillary can be the presidential nominee, and then bring Kamala Harris back as the Democrats' vice presidential nominee. This is not Democratic rumor. This is Republican fan fiction. Oh, my gosh. All right. I'm going to go down this road. This is enough to trigger me to do something like that. I believe very strongly that society depends on foundational knowledge. This is probably the best example I can think of. The example is concrete. Did you know that until about 7 months ago, we did not know how the Romans made their concrete? We had no idea how the Romans made their concrete. And Roman concrete lasts longer than modern concrete. Birmingham, Alabama had an elevated interstate system through Birmingham. I-20 runs through Birmingham, and the interstate system was designed to last about 40 years, I think, and pieces on concrete started falling. They had to literally shut down the interstate through Birmingham, Alabama, tear down the entire interstate and rebuild it because the concrete didn't last. Meanwhile, you've got harbors in Europe that still use the Roman concrete that was poured 2,000 years ago. The Roman Colosseum still stands, and many of the aqueducts do, because of Roman concrete. Until 6-7 months ago, we had no idea, and even now it's only a hypothetical about certain volcanic ash material that the Romans knew to use. The Two Dead Mares International Airport in Atlanta, Georgia, they've torn down parking decks and they're rebuilding parking decks because the concrete, it didn't last. The Roman concrete has lasted for 2,000 years, and in the Dark Ages, after the sack of Rome, we lost the recipe and the memory and the institutional knowledge. And then we went into the Dark Ages, and a lot of that knowledge was gone. The Dark Ages were called the Dark Ages, not because the sun stopped shining, but because the institutional knowledge of the Roman Empire, the Roman bureaucracy, and the stability of Rome collapsed. And the knowledge was deposited into monasteries, where over time, in the Renaissance period, coming out of the Dark Ages, people were going into the monasteries and they were rediscovering the knowledge that had been written down and then forgotten about. And they were going to the monasteries and they were discovering the books and they were relearning the languages, and they found a wealth of knowledge and information and how to design and how to build and how to draw, and they made new discoveries on top of those, and we got from the Renaissance period to the Enlightenment. And we kind of, in the Enlightenment, came to this period of understanding. While, yes, there are metaphysical and theological constructs there about challenging God and God is dead and we're God and all that, one of the bottom line points is that what we remembered, what had been forgotten, is that there are foundational bits of knowledge a society needs to know. You know, one of the things that brought down the Roman Empire, everybody would say, this one thing that I'm obsessed about is what brought down the Roman Empire. You know what, what's his name who wrote the History of the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire said? Christianity brought down the Roman Empire. There's actually a lot of truth to it. If you read the history of the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, it's a fascinating series of books, one giant multi-volume book by Edmund Gibbons. And what he pointed out accurately is that prior to Constantine and the conversion of the Roman Empire to Christianity, to show your affinity for Rome, the eternal city, you joined the Roman bureaucracy, and you gave your all for service to the empire. After Christianity, the eternal city was not Rome, but heaven itself, and you joined the church and gave your wit, wisdom, and genius to the church. So prior to the conversion of the empire, someone like Ambrose would have been a brilliant Roman bureaucrat, or St. Augustine would have been a brilliant Roman bureaucrat, or Athanasius would have been a brilliant Roman bureaucrat. After the conversion of Rome, they all went to the church, and the empire and the bureaucracy lost that wealth of knowledge to the church. The church survived, and Rome collapsed, as God intended, one might say. But they had a wealth of institutional knowledge. They had a wealth of knowledge over time. And I'm worried we're returning to the Dark Ages intellectually in this country. And what's wild is that on the right, it's a loss of basic understanding of economics. And on the left, It's a loss of basic understanding of biology. Now, for those of you who don't know, human beings are technically, so everyone has a genus and species. Every being, every organism, every living thing, whether it's a single-celled organism, whether it's a plant, whether it's a beaver, whether it's a human being, has a genus and a species, a scientific classification. When I was a kid, I learned it as King Philip came over from Great Spain. Kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. They add in suborder now, infraorder, subfamily, tribe, things like that. But the basics still stand. Humans are in the animal class, or in the animal kingdom, the chordata, phylum, we have a spinal cord. Class is mammals. The female variety produces milk. The hominid family, the genus Homo, the species Sapien. Of the genus Homo, we're the last survivors. We had Homo erectus. We got Homo sapiens. The class of mammal, there are male and there are female. The female gives birth and produces milk with mammary glands. The male has mammary glands, but generally does not produce milk. The hominids, the primates, we should go there first because the primates is the order. And the primates, well, they got thumbs. The primates, they got thumbs. And the hominids, well, you've got the gorilla, the pongo, the pan, and the homo. What do? They stand upright. They have thumbs, and they stand upright and walk. And what's notable about this in biology is that the male cannot become female, and the female cannot become male. And the female produces milk and gives birth, have distinct characteristics between the male and the female. And not every classification of animal does that. But among mammals, of which we are, they do. Dolphins are mammals. Dolphins are air-breathing, milk-producing mammals where the female gives birth. The primates then have thumbs. The hominids then walk upright. And the Homo sapiens are us. And the left now tends to say, no, no, we're something unique and different. We're outside of biology. We can change. Men can become women. Women can become men. And male and female is a social construct. Not true. The primates have larger brains compared to other mammals, greater visual acuity at the expense of smell. Some primates are primarily ground-dwelling. Primates are the most social of animals, forming pairs or family groups. Some multi-male, some multi-female groups, some unimale harems. Non-human primates have at least four types of social systems. We don't get to descend outside of that. And the left has forgotten that basic foundational biological knowledge key to the species, and that a two-parent nuclear household matters. We don't get to pick our gender. It's basic biology. The right is doing the same thing now on economics. It's kind of wild. The left is cultural and the right is economic, and together they're going to destroy the working class and the middle class. Look at the right on tariffs. We talked about this yesterday. You're at this point now where we don't know what the gender of the tariff is because the left and the right are so confused on the basic foundational knowledge for a civilization to survive. The right now has really decided that a tariff is not a tax. They can't tell you what a tax is any more than the left can tell you what a woman is. It's wild to watch the intellectual rot on the left and the right. What is a tariff? A tariff is a tax imposed on a good imported from another country that is paid by the purchaser. It's not paid by the country. You impose a tax on goods from Germany. Germany doesn't pay the tax, and the German companies don't pay the tax. The importing company into the United States increases the price of the good by the value of the tax owed, and the consumer pays the tax. You've got economists on the right now saying it's not a tax and it won't wreck the economy. It's actually inflationary. It causes tariffs cause inflation. And historically, we've known tariffs cause inflation. Why does a tariff cause inflation? Because let's use China, because this is an example everybody wants to use. You pay $5 for a t-shirt from China. They add 100% tariff. That $5 t-shirt is now $10. So you now have $5 less to spend on everything else. But you say, wait a second, but I can get a shirt. The reason is to bring manufacturing to the United States, and I can now get the shirt for $7, not $10 with the tariff. I can get it for $7 here. Okay, but that's now a $2 increase. $2 increase in inflation. So now you're in this wild situation where the left can't tell you what a woman is, and the right can't tell you what a tax is, and the right can no longer be honest and tell you that this is inflationary while consistently telling you that Joe Biden is to blame for inflation. And by the way, a tariff is a tax on the poor of the working class at a time the right wants to get the working class on their side. It's insanity within both sides. And here's the common denominator. I think I'd put my finger on the common denominator. You know, the largest agitating groups for not being able to tell you what a gender is and what a man and a woman are, and the largest agitating groups for not being able to tell you a tariff's a tax and forget about basic economics, they're all from the groups inside Washington, D.C., in a bubble there, a group of people who've never worked in the private sector. They are beholden to a donor class that writes donations to the nonprofits for which they work, from which they collect a paycheck. They've never had to go out and make money. They've never had to go out and make a profit. They've never had to go out and earn revenue by providing a good or service. They just stay in Washington and they think of these ideas, and they've decided they want new and shiny ideas. And so on the left, they've embraced this new and wild idea on gender. And on the right, they've embraced very old, destructive economic habits that they wish to repaint as new because they're bored and they think the old ideas are the bad ideas. And actually, the old, the tried, and the true tend to be the things that work. But you can't sell that as easily, and they've broken their brains, and they will, all of them, left and right, take civilization down into the gutter with them, and we will return to a dark age. As you see it happening, the new right is economically illiterate and the new left is biologically illiterate, and God help us all if any of them advance. Now, let's clean the air with the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. You can get three of them and save $200 at EdenPureDeals.com. EdenPureDeals.com. You put in the discount code ERIC3, ERICK3, and you can get three Eden Pure Thunderstorms and you save $200. So go to EdenPureDeals.com today. Now, what is it? Well, it's an air purifier, so it traps the dust, it traps the pollen, all that sort of stuff. But I use it as an air odor eliminator. It's small. I hold it in my hand. I can plug it into the wall, or I can use a USB cord. I've run it off my laptop. I've run it out of my car, and it just packs a wall up. It wipes out noxious odors. So litter box odors, pet odors, smoke odors, frying odors, gassy noxious odors, it wipes them out. EdenPureDeals.com is the website. The discount code ERIC3, ERICK3.
He's got the courage to tell you the actual truth, even when it isn't popular. It's the Eric Erickson Show. Join Eric's army of activists. Text ARMY to 33777 now.
Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. I got to thank listener Chris who sent me this from Scientific America. Have you ever been to Rome? The Pantheon in Rome is to this very day in the 21st century, in the year of our Lord 2024, is still the largest unreinforced concrete dome in the world. The Romans were able to build it. 2,000 years ago, they built the Pantheon. Think about that. 2,000 years ago, roughly, they built the Pantheon, and it's still standing. It is the largest unreinforced concrete dome in the world, and scientists for years have wanted to know what was the secret that allowed concrete structures like the Pantheon and the Colosseum to last over 15 centuries. So there's a guy, he's a scientist at MIT, Admir Masyk, says he's been fascinated with an unusual deposit in Roman concrete of the era. Says the presence of lime class was attributed to low quality, and that bothered me because of the Romans put so much effort in making outstanding construction material, following all the detailed recipes that have been optimized over the course of the century. Why would they put so little effort into ensuring it was mixed right? Well, there had to be more to it. And so he started researching it, and it turns out that these lime class, these deposits that are considered impurities in modern concrete making, actually caused the concrete to self-heal. His team produced samples of what it called hot mixed concrete using the Roman and the modern methods. After the materials hardened, the scientists deliberately cracked the samples and ran water through the cracks. For the sample using the ancient mixing technique, the cracks completely healed within 2 weeks and no more water flowed through the material. The lime class had aided in a chemical process called self-healing. The identical chunks of concrete made under the modern method had water continue to flow and erode the concrete. The difference is that the scientists believe the Romans used a highly chemically reactive form of lime called quicklime that aided the self-healing process, and it is not used to make concrete today. And it also turns out if you use the quicklime, get this, the emissions from the manufacture of concrete go down. It's actually more environmentally friendly to use the Roman method, and it produces a stronger concrete that self-heals. And it's only knowledge. This story literally is dated January 18th, 2023. We're only just finding this stuff out 2,000 years later. It's remarkable. Fascinates me. Now, what also fascinates me is the Omaha Steaks 50% off sale in time for the 4th of July. It's coming up, y'all. I am so ready for the 4th of July. I'm going to shoot fireworks, and then I'm going to go to my happy place, Barnsley Gardens, and I'm going to hit golf balls and hang out on a hammock for a weekend and enjoy myself. I'm so excited to go. Y'all can go to omahasteaks.com today, 50% off site-wide, just in time for the 4th of July. You know you're going to grill out for the 4th of July. You can get incredible packages at Omaha Steaks for the 4th of July, 50% off, and then you can get steak. You can even get in their packages the caramel apple tartlets that my wife adores. All you have to do, go to omahasteaks.com. If you need a package recommendation, put Eric in at the search bar, E-R-I-C-K. They'll give you some great suggestions of what to get. And then you can have your 4th of July grill out taken care of by omahasteaks.com. And you also get their 100% customer satisfaction. So if you're not happy, they're going to make you happy. All you have to do is go to omahasteaks.com today and order. Take advantage of the 50% off site-wide sale.